Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up. Here's Steven, your host.
What is up, guys? Today's date is November the 5th. I'm Steven Masso. Is that what you say, the 5th, or is it 5th? November 5th? November the 5th? I don't know. What's up, guys? It's November 5th, the date. I don't know. I need to stop talking. Okay, so in this episode, I'm going to be going over my recap, my takeaways, of course, a game ball in this game between the New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins. To start it off, man, this was old school football. That's how I would describe the game between the Dolphins and the Jets. It was a 13-6 win. Miami would get the dub at home. Old school in the sense that it was slow, it was physical, it was everything that we're not accustomed to seeing in the sport of football in 2018. We see so many, offensive shootouts lately, just high scoring games. This was not it. And I wish I could say that it was a fun game to watch defensively, and it kind of was, but a lot of it was attributed to just poor offensive play. It made it really painful to watch both these teams on the offensive side of the ball. Like I said, it was both teams struggling offensively. The Dolphins had a mere 168 total yards, averaging 3.1 yards per play. The Jets, on the other side, had 268 yards, but quarterback Sam Darnold threw four interceptions, including one pick six to Jerome Baker. It would be the game's only touchdown. So let's take a deeper look at this game. As always, I start with the game ball. The game ball in this one for me goes to linebacker Kiko Alonso. Alonso has been playing strong all season, but his performance in this one was crucial for the team getting the victory. Alonso had seven tackles, two pass deflections, and a wonderfully played interception where he was floating underneath. He backpedaled back into the zone, lurked, and took an interception away. It was beautifully played. Wonderful job. He is already having a Pro Bowl level season. This performance should put him on the radar if he wasn't already. Now, he wasn't the only person who had a good game. Overall, the defense carried this Miami team. It was a terrific effort all around. TJ McDonald had a great performance as well, leading the team in tackles with 9 and getting an interception that would end up sealing the game on an opportunity for the Jets to come back. Jerome Baker had a game-changing interception. He got a pick six, like I said, only touchdown in the game. Walt Akins got an interception of his own on the last play. It was kind of a desperation throw by Darnold. And then the pressure, it was there all game. But personally, it looked like to me it was more of coverage sacks. The coverage was so good that Darnold didn't know who to throw to, was holding the ball too long, and was getting sacked. Cameron Wake, Akeem Spence, each of them finished the game with 2 sacks. The Dolphins secondary held Darnold to only 229 yards passing. And of course, he had 0 touchdowns and the 4 interceptions that we discussed earlier. And then the rushing attack for the Jets was not really able to get anything going as well. They finished the game with only 80 yards rushing and 3.8 yards per carry. And I think even that 3.8 yards is a little bit skewed in favor of the Jets, because there were several big plays on like 3rd and long where they would do a halfback delay and pick up a chunk play of like 8 or 10 yards. But that was not the case for the majority of the game. They could really not get anything going. Again, the defense carried the team, and that was because the offense could not get anything going for the Dolphins. Brock Osweiler finished the game 15 for 24, 139 yards, again, 0 touchdowns, but Osweiler did not have a turnover, which to me is a success for his standards. Now, I do not think this was an acceptable performance from a passing standpoint, but sneaking away from this game without a turnover from Osweiler, to me, that's an accomplishment. That could have been a game changer. That could have gotten us the loss. The fact that he didn't turn the ball over, I know that's a low standard, but at least there was that. Now, the rushing in this game was abysmal for Miami. Frank Gore dominated the carries, rushing the ball 20 times for only 53 yards. That ends up being an average of 2.7 yards per carry. And then what about Kenyon Drake? Honestly, I am not really sure. Drake has become the second fiddle in this rushing attack, despite clearly being one of the biggest threats offensively on the team. He finished the game with only 3 carries for 9 yards. And for a guy who possesses such a deadly home run threat, to me, this is unacceptable and indicative of something that Gase has against Drake right now, or something going on with Drake. And Drake was more involved in the passing game, but I just cannot understand only 3 of those carries going to Kenyon Drake. Amendola was the lead receiver in this game, finishing with 47 yards on 5 catches. Again, you hear only 47 yards as a lead receiver. It shows how much the offense struggled. There wasn't really too many bright spots. And Devontae Parker, you ask, he had 100 yards last week. He is elite now. Well, nope, not quite. He finished his game with one catch for 8 yards. Of course, it's not on him. Osweiler, Gase, I wasn't really sure what was going on offensively in this game. So let's go over my takeaways from this matchup. The first takeaway is that Gase doesn't deserve the title of an offensive guru, at least not right now. I am impressed by this depleted team still having a winning record, but at no point this season have I thought this was a high-octane offense. When I look at the Rams, that's a team with an offensive guru. When I look at the Saints, the Chiefs, those are offensive gurus, and from an offensive standpoint, Gase has never showed us anything even close to resembling those offenses. And yeah, there have been several good games, and you could say, you can point at the Chicago game and say, hey, he won a game with Brock Osweiler at the quarterback position. But to me, that was Albert Wilson making huge plays after the catch. And that's typically how it goes in this offense. It's a lot of like short routes that doesn't have much creativity to it and depends on people making plays after the catch. And I think that's more indicative of the players we have and less about the coach being an offensive mastermind as he is described, at least right now. My next takeaway is that the stars must align for this team to beat the Colts, Packers, Vikings, and the Patriots. The team has shown moments of great defense and then moments of abysmal defense. The team has shown moments of average offense at best and abysmal offense. In order for the team to beat those other teams, they must have both of those connecting at the exact same time. They will need their defense to step up like they did yesterday and their offense to step up like they did in Chicago and Oakland, which really hasn't happened in the same game this season. And honestly, I think it's a little bit of a stretch to think it will happen consistently, but it is something that will need to be happening because we cannot have a team that only scores 6 points offensively going up against the Green Bay Packers or the New England Patriots, but at the same time, we cannot have a team that allows the Packers or the Vikings to get 200 yards rushing where they don't even need to have a high passing offense in that game. I just think that will be too easy for them. And then my last takeaway for this game is it's time to start questioning the coaches for the locker room turmoil that we keep hearing about. Rashad Jones refused to play the remainder of this game. He left post-game as well and refused to be interviewed. So something is up. On top of that, you have Drake who is getting fewer and fewer touches. And then, of course, we all know what happened with Devontae Parker recently. And then Jay Ajayi, the moment that he was traded, he trashed the team. When Landry was traded, he did as well. Same thing with Ndamukong Suh. Same thing with Jordan Phillips. So how many times can we blow it off as a former player being bitter until we just start saying that, hey, maybe they're speaking some truth. Maybe there is something up. Because the way I look at it, these are pretty notable players in the franchise with their complaints. It was, well, Rashad Jones, he is a franchise favorite at this point. He has been one of the better players in recent years. Ndamukong Suh, for a long time, was the best player on this defense. Jay Ajayi looked incredibly promising, and a lot of people were hopping on that bandwagon, and they love Jay Ajayi. And then Jarvis Landry was the heart and soul of this team for those past 4 years. So how many times can we say that instantly that, yeah, they're just bitter, they're not with the team anymore? How many times can we say that instead of just saying that, hey, maybe they're right, maybe they're onto something, that this player had a notable career, you know, he has no reason to just bash the team. Maybe he is honestly just speaking some truth. And that is how I'm going to wrap up this episode, guys. Let me know what you think. Share your opinions, comment down below. I'd love to hear what you guys think. As always, I will never bash you for your opinion. I would love to have just a casual, calm discussion and conversation about all of this. You can follow me on Twitter at Shady Steven, at Via The Source. Until next time, though, I'm Steven Masso, and this was Via The Source.